Mr. Rayner Taylor, Reel 16. You were talking about when you were wounded near Merville,
yes.
And you were left in a shell hole with your hand,
yes.
A finger wounded.
No, eventually, feeling began to come through.
Were you able to get it out of your webbing?
Eventually, so the feeling returned, and so I got some movement in my arm, and I found out that I still had my hand, but it was in rather a bad mess, and it was in a mess.
What had been hit in there?
It had hit down here,
and it
had taken the finger on all the right on the inside, and it splattered the finger on the finger about that wide.
Three inches wide.
Oh yes, but it pushed these two fingers right out, and this one finger was splattered. Bone and whatever.
So your first and third finger,
yes,
were hit, but your second finger was smashed to bits.
Yeah, oh yes. And what we did, eventually put a field dressing on it. We did this other fella, he is wounded, and we always said, true or untrue, he will never know, that the same bullet that hit me hit him. I'm almost certain he did.
What made you think that?
Because we're so close to one another. Because I was getting out of one side of a hole and he was getting out of the same hole on the other side. It just seemed as though... We always said it did. Whether it did or not, we'll never know, of course.
So did you put your own field dressing on?
Yes, he tied it on. You just slapped it on and wrapped it up.
And what about... Did you do the same for him?
All they did with him was stick it through under his shirt. Oh, they stuck his field dressing under his shirt. It was a clean hole right through his shoulder. By this time, it was hurting. And it was hurting. God, it did hurt.
How long did that take before it started to hurt? About?
An hour. So, probably less than an hour.
So it was numb for the first
hour? When people say, and I've spoken to many, many, many people when they've been wounded, what did it feel like? I said, no problem. You don't feel it. You don't feel being wounded because you're numb for it afterwards. I knew a fella, he had run his feet blown off. And he said the same. He didn't know. He trod on a landmine or something. I don't know. And he said the same. But my experience was, it didn't hurt. The actual, it didn't hurt.
So when you were crying out, it was more fright that you
lost
your
hand. Oh yes, it was fright. There's no doubt, scared stiff. Fright had returned then. And we weren't picked up till the day following.
So how long were you out there for?
Well, all night, all that night.
Were you losing blood, either you or your friend?
Well, there was the dressing was blood stained, you know.
It hadn't cut the vein then in your wrist.
No, I don't know. It cut a sinew down here. I think there's a sinew. Something like that, anyway.
Were you scared that you might be abandoned there, that you were trapped there?
Yeah, we didn't. You see, we reached a stage. We didn't know whether. We'd overrun our position, and we didn't know if we got out of this hole. We didn't know which way to go. We didn't know which way to... We didn't know which way the Germans' holes were. We did not know. And it wasn't till daylight the following morning. We heard voices. And looked... over this, and there was a platoon of one of the Highland regiments. I've never seen anybody react as quick in my life, lady. When we put our heads over there, they thought we were Germans, you see, and they were going over with their rifle slung, because I didn't know. And they thought the Germans had gone back. And there was, and we'd been there all night. Anyway, as soon as they saw, I thought they'd have shot us.
So they levelled the rifles, I think.
Oh, yes.
Didn't they fire?
No. So very quickly they got the stretcher bearers up.
Hang on a minute. While you're in the shell hole, had you had any of your emergency rations or used
No such a thing. Food never entered our head.
So food,
all we wanted to do, get picked up and go, get back. Food, no.
So you say that they called the stretcher bearers. What happened then?
Well, the stretcher bearers came and they just took a look. And stretcher bearers do first aid. They just looked to see that this thing had been bandaged up, got us back into a battalion aid post where the doctor, he takes the dressing off and he looks. To him, it would be a slight wound. To him. To me, it was shattering, world shattering. And by this time, I weren't feeling very well. Just remember, I'm 18 years old. I've just been wounding out all night. Going to this, and it was the battalion aid post was a dugout. And I had a large one.
Were you given a tetanus there?
There's a table. This doctor, he undid it, putting my hand on a table sort of thing. And he got to, what do you do? All that finger was all, there was nothing there when he pulled.
This is your second finger?
Yes. And he got a knife, what they call scalpel, they call them. And I remember him getting this. And he goes, And he got this, and he goes, and he cut it off. It was just like cutting a piece of paper. No feeling whatever. None whatever. And then he got a pad, cotton wool, and he was dipped in some disinfectant, Lysol or something they call it. I remember it being in a, there's Lysol, it was in an enamel bowl, like kidney shaped. And I remember him dipping this in, and plopping it on, put a fresh dressing round, right up, out. That was it. That was the first aid.
That was the battalion first
that
aid.
Was the battalion.
Was that yours or the Highland Regiment?
Well, I don't know, because you're not very often in contact with your battalion aid post, so I don't know whose it was.
Now, how did you feel when he just cut your finger off?
I didn't feel anything.
But in your head?
Oh, well, all I was feeling, I was out of it. For the time being, anyway.
So you weren't too worried about losing a finger?
Oh, no. I was perhaps glad that I hadn't lost my hand, because I did think I'd lost my hand at one time, you know.
But to you, was a finger worth the blighty, if you see what I
mean?
Oh,
yes. It wouldn't have mattered that. Although it did mean that I'd lost my job at work, but that didn't register at the time, you know.
So, did they give you a tetanus injection at the battalion aid post, do you remember?
I don't think so. I was taken down to the...
Were you taken on a stretcher, or were you walking?
Walking. And eventually taken to a casualty clearing station. Now, that was an experience which one would never, ever forget.
Why was that?
Well, there were... Somewhere within the area, there'd been, in fact, among ours, there were quite a lot of casualties. The casualty clearing station was a big marquee. There must have been a dozen operating tables in it. And these, you were lay on stretchers, waiting to be taken in. And as they did one operation, they were taken out, when they finished one, they were taken out, and another brought into that table, and so the line became less and less until eventually it became your turn. Like, I remember carrying me in. Oh God! Walked down, and they were operating like on this side. Oh, and the things they were doing to bodies along there, so much so that I closed my eyes.
What sort of things? Sorry.
Sewing legs off. And things like that. And arms. Horrible wounds. All manner of things. But eventually, the table I was staying to, it was near the far end. So the important part about it was, I could see all these operations. I was being carried down there. Anyway, I got on this operating table. Now, that was my first experience of chloroform. And the administration of chloroform, then, it was very primitive.
How did they do it?
It was like a sieve, about that big,
two
with a handle. In fact,
how big was
this? Well, 2-3 inches across. And they put this over your mouth and nose and put a cloth on it. And they dropped chloroform on it out of a bottle. I can see this. Now, the feeling was every drop that went on felt like them putting a blanket over your head. Now, that was how it felt to me. And you're losing, couldn't breathe. And I can remember fighting for breath. Now, the sister, she was an old lady. I don't know how old, but she was very, very ancient. And my last recollection of that was hearing her say, "Oh, you naughty little boy." Now, that was the last thing that I heard. And the next thing I remember, I was on a hospital train. And I had to wait to see what they'd done at that.
And what had they done in that operation?
Well, they'd sewn it up along here.
In the lower wrist?
Yes, and they'd left a little stump there. Oh, it was a nuisance.
A little stump of your second
just
finger?
Just a little stump there. Biggest nuisance imaginable.
So they'd tidied up the
job? Oh,
they'd
tidied everything else up, yes. But it made me ill. I was very ill.
They said there was something wrong with your leg. What had happened with your leg?
Well, I'd been hit. That had healed up all right. You know, there was no problem.
That was your old problem?
Yes,
leg. You weren't. It was just your hand you were wounded at this time. Now, do you know when this was that you
were
wounded?
No, I couldn't tell you because of that. I was ill for quite a time.
You don't know which part? It was in the summer, I presume, was
yes,
it?
Yes, yes, yes.
You don't know which month, though?
No, I know. I don't. No, I don't.
Was it before you'd be your 19th or 20th birthday?
Oh, yeah. Oh, I was 20th birthday. I was demobilised before that. Yes, I was 18.
So, what happened? You went to the hospital.
Yes.
Was that the one at Wimmerow?
Yes, at Wimmerow.
And what happened there?
Well, it was a big... It's a big hospital. They were huts, you know, and... like armors, these wards were right on top of the cliffs, and you could looking out of the window on a clear day. You could see Dover. You could see the harbour at Dover. Actually, it was very see all these leave boats passing one way and another across the channel. You know,
were you hoping to get sent back to England?
Oh yes.
How long were you in the hospital for?
Well, I couldn't say because I think they must have taken a bit of a pity. I was only a little weedy soul, and I think they would say, "Oh, we can't send this fella back again," and eventually sent me home.
What do you remember about that?
Well, I remember coming home on a hospital ship. Landing at Dover, I think. And it became the practice. wounded fellows. These things became known in the army. The hospital trains, they were usually in two or three parts, and one had to go north, Midland and south. And if you were from the north, you would try to get in that part of the train that was going north. Now, by that time in the war, the authorities had got wise to this. It wasn't good policy to send men in hospital near their own home.
Why not?
Because the hospitals got cluttered up with relations, and the men were absent as often as they were there, going home, you know, when they shouldn't have done. And they did try their best to send you as far away as they possibly could. That was their view. We took a different view of it, of course. And when I came off, you know, this, I said to one of the, I said, "Hey, where's the train going?" He said, "They must have been in the swim." He said, "Oh, front of train, it's going up to North Manchester, Sheffield." I said, "That'll do." And we went there, got in this train, thought when we stayed, I went up, finished up at St. Albans. That's where it finished up. The other part of the train came up north, of course. And that's how they did it.
And where were you going to in St. Albans?
I'm not quite sure whether it was a place called Knapsbury. I don't know. I'm not quite sure about the hospital. Although I do know this. Wherever it was, it was a converted hospital. I must have been one of the last, if not the last, patient in that intake. Because I was placed in a room on my own, and I thought it was beautiful. A bed, white sheets. Oh, God, I lay there. It was a lovely room. Beautiful white leather wall. Oh, it was gorgeous. I lay there. I dozed. I woke up. And then, gradually, I had a feeling there's something wrong here. Couldn't hear anything. There was no, you couldn't hear a movement of people outside or anything like that. And I reached the stage where I could hear myself breathe. And I looked round. There's nowhere I could call anybody. Nowhere. There was a little window right at the top. There was a hole in the door, which was covered. And that's how I stayed that night. I never slept a wink. I was in a confined cell. I didn't know it.
A padded cell?
A padded cell. I didn't know it. Which was being used because there was another bed. And because they'd been very busy, whether the fact had been overlooked that I was there was somebody in there. Oh, next morning, when that door opened, I shot through that door like a bat out of hell. That was a rotten experience, that.
Now, I just wanted to check, because you were born July 1898. Mm. That would make you about 20
yes.
in 1918,
yes.
not
yes.
18. Not is 18. That right?
Yes, that's right.
Okay, because it's sometimes, I know it's difficult to yes. think of it immediately. What happened next at this hospital, and what treatment did you get?
St. Albans. The treatment
Were you
became,
put in a normal ward?
Oh, yeah, put in a normal ward. And eventually, I was sent convalescent.
Did they do anything? Were you able to move your hand all right?
Yes. But there wasn't a lot. There wasn't remedial treatment at the hospital. There was a matter of just healing the wounds. The rest then would come out of the convalescent place.
Was there any problem in the healing of the wounds?
Yes. I couldn't close my hand. I was sent to Eastbourne, to Summerdown Camp. At Eastbourne.
And this is still in the summer of 1918,
oh,
isn't it?
Summer Down Camp. It was a combatant camp in Eastbourne. Well, they had remedial massage, and that enabled me to get as right as I ever would be with that, you know.
Were you worried about having lost your trade, or were you still just pleased that you weren't on the Western Front?
I was pleased I wasn't in the, on the front then. The rest, I thought something would turn up. It didn't bother me then.
Were you worried about being sent back, because when it started to mend?
Yes, until I found out, or they found out, I couldn't hold a rifle on the slope, because it just... I wasn't strong enough. And from then on, of course, I was a non-combatant.
How long were you at Eastbourne for?
Fair enough, for a time. A fair time at Eastbourne.
Did they put you any light duties at Summerdown Camp? Or?
Oh, no. It was a matter of trying to get right again. It was a convalescent camp.
Had you been able to write home? And...
Oh, yes. In fact, my mother came to see me at this camp for the first time that she'd been out of Lancashire. And now I'll remember...
What happened?
What a job we had to get my mother... Mother had never been to London. Quit to London, it was like going to the end of the world to people up here, you know. And I know... they couldn't have afforded it. And out of my credits, that I hadn't been drawing any, we drew no wage while in hospital. And there was enough credit in there for my mother to come to Eastbourne to see me. And she did come.
So you had to pay for it?
I paid for it, oh yes. And my dad's instructions... what she had to do to cross London. He'd never been himself, you know. But eventually, and I remember going to meet her at Eastbourne Station. I could see this little old lady. She died at 57. I thought she was an old lady. Getting off the train and coming down this shoe. It was very emotional, that was, you know.
Did you keep in touch with anybody that you knew from your old unit? Like,
No.
How had you lost now your money? You lost your money at this stage, didn't
oh,
you?
Oh, yes.
How did that happen?
I don't know. It was lost when I went in hospital, you know.
You never got your kit? It was with your kit, was it?
Oh, yes. You never got, that never came up.
Did you know what happened to it at all?
No.
Did you resent that?
Very much so. Bloody RMC, we used to say. We blamed everything on the RMC, you know.
But they wouldn't have had your kit, would they?
I don't know. Somebody had.
Why did you blame the RAMC?
Well, because there was a saying for that, RAMC, rob all my comrades. So they was accepted that.
How did they get that reputation? Do you think it was true?
Possibly. I don't know. It was accepted. Everybody would rob all my comrades.
Now,
long before I went in the army, I knew that.
Now, what happened after you'd left Eastbourne?
Well, after I left Eastbourne, I was sent to Whitchurch again. And from Whitchurch...
To Priest Heath?
Yes. And from there, we were drafted to what they call provisional companies. Now, from provisional companies... they drew all their duties, all the odds and sods duties that semi-fit men could undertake without arms.
So this was before the armistice then?
Oh, yes. And about armistice time.
So it was late summer,
yes.
Early autumn?
Yes.
And what you did they have a name, these provisional companies?
No, you... no, they were just two.
And they were, you were based at Priest
Heath? Yes. You were based with your own unit there, and then you were sent, I don't know where you were sent to, but the provisional companies contained men of all units. They weren't just your own unit. They could be any unit.
And they were all men like yourself?
Oh, yes, that had been wounded in some way or another.
And what was the first job your company was put on?
Prisoner of war duties. Prisoner of war camp duties.
Do you remember which camp?
Yes, one at... well, somewhere down that way, I thought it was called. I might have got... Now, I might have got two names mixed up here. I might have got the name of Knapsbury mixed up with the name of the hospital I went in. I rather think that this Knapsbury was an institution, and I think that's at St. Albans. But I think somehow I've got those two mixed up. But that one name is one of those two places. And it was a prisoner of war camp.
Which whereabouts, though? I mean, which part of the country?
Oh, down south. And St. Albans sticks in my mind more than anything else.
Again? So
again, yes.
And what size was the camp?
Well, it was like a... It was a big institution. It would contain, oh, 300 or 400 prisoners, you know.
And where were they living?
It was like a big hospital, a big... that may have been a mental hospital at one time. It gives you that impression. And there was a big perimeter fence, you know. Our job, of course, was to parade the perimeter fence with a rifle with no ammunition, you know. That was just for show.
And where were you living?
Well, we had a hut within the...
And how many of you were guarding these 400 or so prisoners?
Well, I couldn't say how many, but during the night they'd mount this guard at the gates, and you took your turn at doing sentry, and that's the main thing. It was a really easy job, boring and...
What would you do when you were on sentry then?
Just walk round.
The perimeter fence?
Just walk round the perimeter fence. Tried to kill as time as best you could, and often you would find these Germans who've been prisoners, some of them a long time, and they'd come up to the fence, very dejected, tired, weary, not been home for 4 years, and they would try to talk in English to you, you know. And you felt desperately sorry for them. Desperately sorry for them.
How big was the fence?
You what?
What was the fence like?
Oh, it was a big, tall fence, barbed wire.
Taller than a man, then?
Oh, yes, yes.
And they showed no signs of wanting to escape?
Oh, they had no reason to escape because they knew they'd be going home shortly.
So you all realised the war was coming?
Oh, yes, yes, they knew it. They knew that.